Did you serve together at all?
I know war. What's going on in Palestine right now is not a war.
I think it's a fair fight that's happening in Gaza at this time.
So what about my statement of saying that I also cry for Palestinian children?
Will Rogan have an impact at all on you?
That he put up on Twitter that shows them maybe drone bombing those kids that are those men, I should say, unarmed people that were walking towards the rubble.
There's nothing more American than speaking out against what's wrong.
We know there are many benefits to the use of black seed, according to the authentic statements of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him. That's why I use the black seed by Tasneem, and 50% of the profits from your order will go towards establishing the Deen Center, the Masjid and Mega Dawah Center. Use promo code The Deen Show for 15% off. My next guest, former U.S. Special Forces. No, I'm not talking about Janko Wilnick.
What do you feel about that? From a moral perspective, as a former SEAL, do you think it's a fair fight, what's happening there?
No. I got someone who actually, Janko Wilnick, if I'm pronouncing that right, can learn something from. A man of courage, not just that, but a show of extraordinary humanity. And I want to go ahead and introduce my guest and have him come out. Let's take a look here, who he is, and I'm excited to have him on.
My name is Alan Shabaro. I was with 3rd Special Forces Group. I was with the Commanders in Extremis Force of B-23. I was a sniper, assaulter, and a breacher. I know war. What's going on in Palestine right now is not a war. It's not. It is the dehumanization, it's the genocide, it's the ethnic cleansing of a specific people to take their land. This is not war. These are people that are defending themselves. I see this constantly where people are just repeatedly dehumanizing these people. This is wrong. And there's nothing more American than speaking out against what's wrong. I can't tell you how many times I've seen horrible things, and this takes it to an entirely new level. The U.S. taxpayer is paying for this, which makes it even more frustrating. I'm paying for this. I am seeing what's happening to this. This needs to stop. Whatever you can do, anything. This needs to stop.
Dude, I love you very much. I love all the work that you're doing.
When I was ready to talk about it, I would only talk to you.
And I was explaining how much respect I have for the faith of Islam.
Welcome to the Deen Show. The Deen Show.
Sergeant Allen, Professor, how are you?
Excellent. How you doing?
Good. Great to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, former Special U.S. Forces. And usually people think of Janko Wilnick. Am I pronouncing his name right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar? You're familiar with him? Did you guys, did you serve together at all? Do you have any history together? Have you guys?
So the only history prior to this last August was I taught at the Origin Camp that he has every year. And that's where I got to meet him, actually talk to him. And the only other time was actually at Gracie Nationals in 2001. We were both purple belts competing in the same tournament. But we didn't talk at all or anything like that. So we're just kind of like, you know, interweaving. You know how jiu-jitsu is?
Yes.
You know, just like we were talking about earlier, you know, everyone kind of knows each other in one way or another.
So what I was, what was extraordinary is your humanity, you know, coming out and these 3 points, nothing more American at this point than, you know, speaking out against is what got you to the point that you are actually speaking out?
Honestly, initially I went to the city hall meeting because I was frustrated. I just saw the veto from the U.S. for the 3rd time. Shutting down the ceasefire resolution, and I was really frustrated. Saw that there was a city hall meeting coming up, and you know what? These guys get paid for it. They're going to hear me vent. I didn't know anyone going in. I didn't know that there was other people that were speaking for that cause until later. And it was strange because I didn't know it was being recorded. A friend of mine from Houston asked me if I spoke at City Hall, and I said yes. And they found the video, they edited it, and asked me, you know, do you mind if we send it out? I think it'd be really powerful. And I was like, sure. I don't see how that would be. I was just literally venting and ranting. but it seemed to make a huge impact. So I'm glad and just going to keep pushing forward with it and carry the momentum as much as I can.
Now, fill us in. Okay, you talked a little bit about that. Now, when you were, when we played the video, so you're a former U.S. Special Forces sergeant. Tell us a little bit about your history in the armed forces.
So initially, I enlisted in 95, and then as a lightweight vehicle mechanic. And I was stationed at Fort Hood in Texas, and that's originally how I ended up in Texas. There wasn't anything going on during that time frame in the 90s. Somalia had been over, Bosnia and Kosovo had been played out, and everyone was coming back from that. And I just discovered jiu-jitsu in 96. So I caught that addiction bug. And as we both know, at the time, there was very few black belts in the U.S. And the only black belt that was actually in the state was Carlos Machado. So I ended up moving up to Dallas, and that's how I ended up staying here. In the meantime, I was in the reserves going to school. I reclassed to field artillery, and I was a drill sergeant. And did my trail time in Fort Sill in Oklahoma. And after 9/11, I didn't want to be on the sidelines. You know, there was a fight that was going in, and, you know, my grandfather was in World War II. My father was in the Air Force in the 70s. And I felt that was like the calling, you know, of my generation. So shortly after that, I enlisted or went back active duty and went to selection. I made selection, went through the Q course, and then got recruited onto B-23. And did my time with B-23 and got out in 2010 from active duty. From 2010 to 2012, I was in Special Forces National Guard. And then I got out entirely in 2012.
And you said here in the talk that you were giving there that this is not a war. What did you mean by that?
So in any engagement, any type of conflict, we do have to abide by the ROEs, the rules of engagement. And that's taken very seriously. You don't target civilians. You don't, you know, the games, and I say games, and the horrific acts that are being played out there are literally an extermination. There's so many things missing from their narrative, you know, going in there without names. And then when they come out, they got names. Oh yeah, this guy's a terrorist. Well, how do you target them? You know, there's so many things that are off on this. And by the time they actually go in there and do the mission, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we got, you know, 50 of these Hamas. Well, did you go on there looking for 50? You know, do you have verification? Can you vet that? Is there anything that you can do to verify that this person was a terrorist, or are you just saying they're terrorists? And that's what that from the very beginning, it's been going on, and it's just continually escalated from there. Mm-hmm. So they don't abide by any rules of engagement, any type of international law. And to say that they're the most moral army, I think is an absolute joke.
I mean, you're a former special U.S. forces. So now you're looking at it from a different lens, from a different way that the normal person. So you're seeing things that most people, like, you know, some common sense is there, and people who, because there's a lot of programming also. That's another thing, you know, the media and, you know, the common narrative and whatnot. So how long did it take you to, and what spoke your interest had you get more interested that you even went further? Because it's, for some people, it's like that. Yeah, they see it, but they're like, I'm not going to speak out. The real courage that I talked about, you need some courage, and also the courage of speaking out against the herd, the masses, right? The common narrative. You went above and beyond. What got you to that point?
I'm not so proud to admit this, but the moment that everything became unraveled for me was maybe a few days after October 7th. There'd been things along the way for the last, 15 years or so that kind of popped up, kind of like, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't feel right. And I'll just, shelf it. But the moment that I heard the words unprovoked, it made me, and it was being, it was being parroted by all the major media. And so they were literally just reporting the exact same thing over and over again and never mentioning once what had happened October 6th, or October 5th, or October 4th, or the year prior to that, mm-hmm. and everything else. And it was frustrating to, like, if you're going to be a media outlet, you have to give the most accurate account of the situation possible. And it was literally just one-sided. And regardless of, I knew that there was going to be repercussions. I already knew that. But it didn't matter. It's the right thing to do. I wholeheartedly believe in it. And that's really all I needed. The other things that came up were just kind of, how should I put this? The things that I saw, the things that I did, and the questions that I have really became highlighted after October, looking back and seeing like how the media has played this and how they're layering it and the different reports that are coming out that they're giving. It just sounded way too falsified. They're not realistic actions and reports. It just, everything seemed off on it. I can't really put my finger on it, but anytime that, anytime that you have, people that are using starving people to lure them into an area where you can create a deadly situation, where you have starving people, and I can't get this out of my head, but when you have starving people that are literally just trying to get food, and you know this, and in the dark, while everyone is literally starving to get the supplies that they've been waiting weeks for, and then you use that opportunity to create chaos and to create a situation so that you can, make it worse, so you can actually take out more people. And I truly believe that is their ultimate goal. If you look at it from a perspective where they're just trying to get rid of people, everything they're doing makes sense. It doesn't matter if you kill them, if they move on their own, if they, migrate somewhere else, voluntary, involuntary, it doesn't matter. Just get them out. Everything else starts to make sense. And if you just look at it that perspective, then all pretty much 90% of your questions that you have about what's going on are answered, because it's a method and a way and a manner for them to eliminate them off that land.
Now, you mentioned the Carlos Machado from the Machado brothers. Anybody who's in the jiu-jitsu knows who the Machado, legendary Machado family. Now, it had me thinking about, okay, Machados, you got Joe Rogan. He's also connected. His lineage is there, right, with John Jacques? He's his student, Joe Rogan is John Jacques' student. Did Joe Rogan have any impact on you? Because he's also started to... I recently had Dave Smith on. He's also Jewish. He's talking about this, the common narrative, and what we're fed is totally lies. It's not true. And he says, I'm quoting, look, I'm Jewish, right? And I wish the Israelis, I wish, right? It'd make my life much more easier. Did Joe Rogan have an impact at all on you?
I want to know what she was fired for. Because was it criticism of Israel? Did she show that Edward Snowden video that he put up on Twitter that shows them drone bombing those kids that are those men, I should say, unarmed people that were walking towards the rubble that clearly weren't causing any danger to anybody?
Yeah, right.
They just bombed them.
you know, it's your duty. It's just like for Biden or whoever you like, you're supposed to cover up for them. Because
but the whole thing is like they're always saying they're only targeting Hamas and everybody else is a casualty. Well, if those guys are just unarmed civilians and they're walking alone, that's what they appear to be.
Dresden.
And you just blast them from the sky with robots.
This is the tragedy of war.
Yeah, this is insane. And no one knows what to think now, because if you can't talk about that, if you can't say that's real, then you're saying that genocide is okay as long as we're doing it. And
that is what we're saying.
And if you're saying that from a perspective of someone who literally went through the Holocaust, or your people, your tribe went through the fucking Holocaust, and now you're willing to do it?
I hope the irony's not lost on you.
It's so nuts. It's so hard to imagine that someone where a culture, like a country was like officially founded in what, 47?
48.
48? Okay. Officially founded. So that's so recent. and you guys are willing to do what was done to you that led you to believe that you needed to start your own country? You're yeah. willing to do that, at least on a small scale, in Gaza. Like, there's nothing left. If you see the video.
And have you met Joe Rogan, since you guys have the same teacher?
I got my black belt from Carlos, and we split ways after 13 years. I've been ranked under Chris Howder, who got his black belt from Jaime Machado. So
okay, I know Hagan, yes.
Yeah. So Chris Howder, one of the Dirty Dozen, got his black belt from him, and then I've been under him for the better part of a decade.
I got you. So I'm gonna go ahead and play this next clip. I want to get this reaction from you, in the hopes of hopefully his humanity can come on. I've read one of his books, and he uses the term. This is Jocko, warriors, and warriors translating into people of integrity, good character, and whatnot. And this is really the time now. We're seeing a modern day genocide in 4K. There's a slogan, "Never again," but now everyone's quiet, silent, except for people like yourself. So I want to get your reaction to this.
And when you look at the situation with Israel and their war with Hamas, and in particular, the collateral damage of so many civilians, particularly children, getting killed in the process of trying to eliminate Hamas, what do you feel about that? From a moral perspective, as a former SEAL, do you think it's a fair fight, what's happening there?
Do I think it's a fair fight that's happening in Gaza at this time?
Yeah.
You know, I saw a video clip the other day, Pierce, of some Israeli soldiers that were moving down the street in Gaza. And as I was watching them move down the street, I remember that feeling I told you, you get in your gut, of that gut-wrenching, horrible feeling when someone's going to get wounded or killed.
Yeah.
As I was watching these Israeli soldiers move down the street, I got that feeling.
What do you think? The question was, is it a fair fight? How would you have answered that? And what's your reaction?
No, it's not a fair fight. It's, I don't know how it, I'd love to talk about him. I do respect a lot of what he says. I got to meet him and talk to him this last summer.
I do also. That's why I'm hoping that he sees this and he can connect with someone like you, and he can have a shift and come out and start speaking out.
And that's the thing. And I understand his perspective, and I understand what he's saying. But the larger context is what's missing. You have a military occupation that you cannot deny. I mean, this is an apartheid state. If you have different roads that certain people can drive on and certain people cannot, this is part of apartheid.
That you were, I don't know, ashamed of 90% of the job you had to do here. What was these 90%?
This. I was in a patrol that escorted the engineers who sealed up the doors of these families here so they cannot go out to the street, because the Shuada Street, the road where we are now, is a sterile road. Palestinians cannot step a foot here. And Palestinian families who live on this road, their front door is welded shut. And for them, getting in and out of the house is climbing in the roof, taking a ladder and a back way into the old city.
But this is Palestine, Palestinian territory.
Yeah, this is occupied territories, yeah. Even the most right-wing government in Israel's history, which is the current government, never annexed Hebron. Yeah. Under military rule, from 1967 to today, more than my lifetime, Palestinians who live here have no say.
if you have different laws, if you have, I mean, the people in Gaza, I mean, for the last couple of decades, they've had bans on everything from cilantro to potato chips, wedding dresses, fishing poles. I mean, all these different things. How can you not see that as like an occupied state? You have the continuation of settlers that are, they're pushing through, you know, trying to colonize. These are illegal settlements that there is no argument that they're illegal settlements, bottom line. And these are the things that are not taken out of context, or excuse me, that are taken out of context when they're just trying to give their narrative, right? They're just showing, yeah, the Israeli soldiers that are walking down, something bad's going to happen. If you reverse roles, right, you'd see it not as a bad thing about to happen, but a good thing happening for the resistance, right? So a lot of it is different, you know, having to understand the perspective of it. And again, my biggest thing is no innocent civilians, bottom line. That is where I draw the line. Absolutely not. Do I, you know, I don't agree with what happened on October 7th. Because it involves innocent civilians. I also don't condone what's been going on for the 30,000, you know, or was it up to now like 36,000, you know, 38,000 that have been killed. And it's not just the proportionality, but it's the intent of what they're trying to do. It matches up exactly for the last 75 years what they've been attempting to do. And that is to literally to exterminate as many Palestinians as possible so they can just take their land. Resources, anything that, you know, that's there, you know, for the canal, the Ben Gurion canal, the natural reserve gas, the national gas reserves off the coast and on the land. If you look at it from that perspective, it's very difficult, you know, to see anything other than an occupier that's oppressing the population.
How do you think some of the special forces, some of the people in your unit, Jocko's unit, Jocko himself, his unit, and if they had to deal with some people coming over here and they were like, you know, our country, all right? And they were like, hey, my great-great-grandfather, he said this used to be ours. God gave us this land. How do you think that would be the reception of that would be taken?
And this is one thing that's a talking point that I do bring up a lot when I'm having these conversations with people that don't have the same mentality as I do. Mm-hmm. And when you have... If you just reverse the roles, the Mexicans crossed over the border. They said, this is our land. This Texas belongs to us. There's an argument to be made there, right? There is an argument to be made. Mm-hmm. And they use those as their justifying rights to, you know, attack Texas. And then they separate, right? And they have, you know, Austin or Dallas in one and Houston in another. And it constantly gets smaller and smaller. And everyone else, you know, they're being killed. There's no justice whatsoever. I got evicted from my home. They killed my sister. They killed my uncle. They tortured and detained my younger brother. I mean, all these things have to be, you know, contextualized to understand what's actually going on, you know. And if you just reverse that same situation, I have yet to meet someone that honestly is responding in an honest manner that would say, no, I would fight back. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them is saying, yeah, I would fight back. Then why aren't you seeing this? But Hamas, but terror, but it's the same narrative. Mm-hmm. But you literally just agreed that this is an occupied state. This is, you know, a clear occupation and apartheid, and that you would fight back. So why can't you see that? And it's for some reason, there is the connection that I have the most trouble, like, you know, for them to see. Mm-hmm. And I understand it's difficult because you're getting all these different reports, you know, from media, mass media that's funneling, you know, all these different, these narratives, the same narrative over and over again on how, you know, oh, well, if Hamas lays down their arms, there would be peace. If the Israelis lay down their arms, they would get slaughtered. We don't have any more slave rebellions here in the United States because we don't have any humans that are enslaved. So there's no resistance to be made. That's the reason we don't have slave rebellions anymore. There aren't any more slaves. There aren't any slaves, period. So if you look at that in the same context, what would get rid of Hamas? It's the resistance, the ideology, because you can, yeah, absolutely, I agree that you can actually get rid of Hamas, but something will take over right away. It's the ideology of resistance that will never be defeated military-wise. And we have this in so many instances in history. Mm-hmm. And this is the biggest thing that I find upsetting, is that we have to learn from history so it's not repeated. And it's repeating itself. We're seeing it happen, you know, and and I see so many people standing by. This is what I feel is wrong. This is where I feel like, you know, regardless of, you know, what the ramifications will be, I need to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And the right thing right now is defending, you know, the Palestinians and what's going on right now, and bringing my voice to as far reach as possible to make that be known.
I want to get your reaction to one more video. And this is really important because all human life is precious. I like what you're saying, innocent life. This is all human life is precious, but it just seems like the Palestinian life here, it doesn't seem like some people are taking it as precious. It's like, that's the really crazy thing. So I want to go and this is somebody, Candace Owens, who recently got fired, and she started also speaking out.
I am uncomfortable with the amount of innocent life that is lost right now in Gaza.
And let's have a look at this.
And this is one of the things you clearly do not understand. The same way most don't, who are anti-Semites, you don't get it. I cry for what's going on in Israel. I cry just as much for what we are forced to do. Golda Meir had a great quote. She said that one day we may be able to forgive them for killing Israeli children. We will never be able to forgive them for making us kill their children.
So what about my statement of saying that I also cry for Palestinian children is wrong to you if you also admit it is sad when Palestinian children die?
It's painful, but it is not in any way, shape, or form morally equivalent to October.
It's mind-blowing. What's your reaction to that?
I think a buddy of mine that I was talking to a couple of weeks ago put it best. And so he was comparing that to a domestic call.
Yeah.
And when you put it in that context, I couldn't, I mean, it's not funny. I get it. But the analogy was got me chuckling. It just using the, you know, I'm sorry. This is not funny. It's not funny in both situations, but I mean, it is as ridiculous. You know, cop walks in and both in the kitchen, the woman's beat up and the guy's constantly, well, she made me do it. I didn't want to beat her, but she made me do it. How can you, I mean,
it's the same thing he's saying pretty much.
Yeah. And I don't, that's the thing I don't understand is there, it's Hamas that's making it. No, you're doing it. Bottom line, I don't care what you say, what your context is, you're doing it. That's the bottom line. You're doing it. There is no like, oh, he made me do it. No, you're doing it. If Hamas built tunnels under Tel Aviv and the exact same scenario, they took hostages and they were hiding in tunnels in a intricate tunnel system under Tel Aviv. Not a person in their right mind would say they would bomb Tel Aviv and do the same thing to Gaza. They wouldn't flatten it, right? They would do surgical, you know, entries. The whole thing, that the first questions that came out after October 7th, you know, they kept saying hostages, women, hostages, hostages, hostages. And especially after like a couple of months, it just started becoming like so old and repetitive. And if they knew where the hostages were, why aren't they getting them? If they don't know where they are, I'm telling you, I don't have, you know, an entire career in SF. I haven't been there for 20, 30 years, but I was in a hostage rescue unit. Bombing the area where your hostages are at probably isn't the best idea. I'm just saying, you know, so if it is the hostages that you're concerned about, and another thing is shooting them probably isn't the best idea either. If you're trying to get them alive back, you know, shooting them when they're surrendering and waving white flags and speaking to you in Hebrew.
You've seen that also, yeah. It's very sad. I want to thank you again. Thank you for your humanity. Thank you for speaking out. God bless you. Thank you.
Thanks, sir.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, brothers and sisters. This is your brother Hassan Shibli, and I am so excited, so grateful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to be standing right here at the Deen Center that is being established in Tampa by brother Eddie from the Deen Show. We are so excited that he's chosen Tampa to be this hub and center for da'wah, not just locally, alhamdulillah, where we can host seminars, programs, da'wah activities. There's enough space for a school, gymnasium, musalla, and a studio that can inshallah reach people globally to share the beauty of Islam. We're so excited to have this established here locally in Tampa, and I want to encourage you all, do what you can to help complete this project and make it a reality. And I invite you all to join me in supporting the center. May Allah make it a sadaqah jariyah for all of us to share the beauty of the deen with all humanity. Ameen. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I cannot leave without giving you a gift. If you're not yet Muslim and you're tuning in to see what these Muslims are talking about and you like a free copy of the Quran, go ahead and visit thedeenshow.com. We'll take care of the postage and everything and get it delivered to you. And if you still have some questions about Islam, call us at 1-800-662-4752. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.